Before we get started on the Bengals Beat podcast, I wanted to let you know that we are now brought to you by 50 West Brewery. They have award-winning beers coupled with a bike shop, canoe and kayak library, volleyball leagues, running groups, and a killer food menu. At 50 West, they pride themselves on adding value to people's lives through beer. Is there a better way to add value to people's lives than through beer? Whether you're looking to take a float down the river and end with a beer or throw back a couple and play some volleyball, 50 West is unlike any other brewery you've ever seen. Check out their website at 50westbrew.com. That's F-I-F-T-Y, westbrew.com for more information. 50 West, where every beer's a journey. Come join for the ride. Welcome into the BBP. This is the Cincinnati Inquirer's Bengals Beat podcast presented by 50 West Brewery. Here, your Cincinnati.com Bengals Beat writers, Jim Osarski and Paul Weiner Jr. invite you beyond the headlines and inside Paul Brown Stadium for the scoop on all things Bengals. Find out insider news, listen in on conversations with players, coaches, and others relevant to the club. You can subscribe in iTunes, Google Play, or your preferred podcast platform. Of course, you can always listen in the podcast section of our Cincinnati.com Bengals app. Let's go. All right, welcome into the latest edition of the BBP. It's the Bengals Beat Podcast presented by 50 West Brewing Company. Pumped to be with you, Paul Daner Jr. and Jim Ozarski. We're your Bengals beat writers. You know where we work. It's Cincinnati Inquirer. You know where the website is. It's Cincinnati.com. I'm fresh back from Orlando. Thankfully, I stayed out of the sun because it's dangerous for me because I'm very pale. But I was not able to stay away from spring break family onslaughts. It's this time of year, the Disney spring break crowd, Jim, they're relentless and full of ways to make you unhappy.
Yeah. Did you, was there family twerking going on in Orlando?
Oh, no, not that I saw. Thank okay. God. What is family? Is that a thing?
I don't know.
Group twerk, come on, kids. I mean, let's all gather around the lobby of the hotel and twerk.
Yeah, hasn't that turned into a spring break family activity?
I hope not.
if it did, it would show up in Florida.
No doubt. I mean, that's just it. I don't want to say no that it doesn't happen because I assume everything can happen in Florida. I mean, you know. Face-eating zombie guy was a real thing. So I'm not gonna rule anything out when it comes to Florida Man, but I did not witness that, thank God. So I want to quick go through sort of what we're going to get to, because I did witness and hear a lot of things over the week at the league meetings, which involves sitting down with owners, lots of chats at bars with stuff written on napkins, and then, you know, you've got coaches' breakfasts and rule changes and all kinds of stuff that went down. So there's a lot to get to. We're going to stick with mostly Bengals stuff. We don't really have time to get too much into the new targeting rule and the catch rule and all that stuff. I'll get to that a little bit. You can check the website for that. But today, I want to mostly base everything we've got around three different interviews, conversations that were had, one being with Troy and Katie Blackburn, of course, Katie, Mike Brown's daughter, vice presidents. Mike did not make the trip because he had hip replacement surgery. There's no health scare at all or anything like that. He's doing fine, but trying to, you know, anybody that's ever done anything like that knows it's not easy. Right. And so he's working his way back from that. So did not travel. So it was Mike and Katie, and then Duke Tobin was also down there. So I had a conversation with him on a few, he was very interesting on a few topics. So I want to make sure we get some stuff he had to say, particularly about Vontaze Burfict. And of course we had the hour long coach's breakfast with Marvin Lewis, which is, it's honestly, it's exhausting. It's exhausting to watch because it's just reporters from everywhere come over. They sit down at the table. They go in. They go out. Of course, myself, Bengals.com, both there the whole time asking. And you kind of get exhausted for Marvin. I mean, right. I kind of feel he got to sit there and just take questions for an hour straight. It looks tiring. Right. He only snapped at one reporter. who was going off, who was trying to get at him about players with off-field trouble, and it went on a little too long and got a little too pushy, and he sort of fired off a, no, you did come over here to ask me about this. Don't say you didn't. You came to me for a reason, and it was a whole thing. But everybody's okay.
It's funny.
So we're going to get up to all that stuff. Does that sound – like something you're interested in, Jim?
You know, yes. It was, I'm not so much, I am more curious about Florida guy and Florida guy family stalking around the owner's meetings. But yes, hearing about rules changes that, of course, showed Bengals Steelers film to say this is what you don't do anymore. And yeah, some of the stuff, obviously, you know, I think the comments that you wrote up, we'll hear from Troy and Katie about winning in 18 and 19, which we've been saying was their point since January. Some fans are saying, wow, this is the exact thing we want to hear.
Yeah.
And then other fans being like, they didn't trade for Odell Beckham. They don't want to win. So like, it's an interesting kind of,
yeah.
in between, at least that I've heard.
Yeah. From. And so let's kind of dive into that. I mean, it's up now. The story that I sort of wrote from yesterday, there's a lot more that I'm going to have from that conversation, cause they hit on a lot. But I want to just focus on that for now, because, you know, the concept of we want to, this offseason has been all about winning now and aggression towards winning now, to which mostly gets laughed at. I mean, that's mostly right. The reaction that we get to that being said, because, you know, until you actually go do it, and their method, their idea of winning now is, and the approach to that is much different than, say, the LA Rams, who want all your players. Right. And they want to take on all the cap space and truly sell out to win now and mortgage the future as part of that process. So there's a difference, right? I mean, they have a conservative view of what aggression looks like, because they're not going to do anything to totally mortgage any ability to do things in the future or feel like they're screwing up what their cap space will look like into the future, where they're having to cut bunches of guys and things like that. There's a difference. So let me just do this. Let me bring in this portion of my question, which what prompted this was, and you'll see, was a question about the fan base. And to be quite honest, how are they going to win them back? I mean, they're alienated. They didn't like the Marvin decision, and they're pissed about it. And what do you do? How do you approach that from an organizational aspect? That prompted a lot of this win now stuff. So I'm gonna bring in that portion of Troy Blackburn and Katie Blackburn from the owners' meetings. This was on Wednesday, and then we'll react to that.
Where do you guys feel like the team's relationship with the fan base is right now? I mean, obviously the Marvin decision wasn't the most popular thing that's ever happened, but do you feel like you guys need to try to reach out a little extra to, because the last two seasons haven't been as good, and to keep them on board, or where you guys feel like the team and the fans are at right now with each other?
I think the starting point that we operate from is that fans want a successful product on the field, and we know that. And we know that last year disappointed them. And one of the things that I would tell you that we feel that we can do as much as anything is to focus on generating positive on-field results, and that has been what has driven our thinking this entire offseason. I think effecting the trade for Cordy Glenn, which was a major move to address what we and our fans thought was an area that we needed to have better play for us to get back into the postseason, was a big move, an expensive move, but a move that aligned with what fans wanted and what we wanted. I think being able to be aggressive in free agency and re-sign Tyler Eifert, I think a lot of fans really see him as somebody that, that can and hopefully will make a very positive difference on the football team. And we spent at a high level to do that. I think adding a quality starting player like a Preston Brown, I think goes to reinforcing both the message to fans that we very much want to win now. This is not, we're not in a building program. We have too many good players to be building for the future. We have so many good players we feel we need to build for now. And so that really is what drove us. And then you augment that with bringing back a quality player in person like Kevin Huber, adding some guys with a high upside. Bobby Hart was a good starting right tackle for the New York Giants. He's not as well known in Cincinnati, and that was not as flashy a signing. But he has a chance to positively impact it. If you can get Chris Baker back to playing where he was 2 years ago, you may have very quietly added a quality contributing defensive lineman. So I think very much the offseason for us has been focused on win now. And yet, I think when we look to the draft, we want to keep the pipeline of high-end talent fresh and vibrant. We've met with some, we pay various different consultants, outside consultants, to give us kind of feedback on how we're doing from a personnel standpoint. We met with them down here. They did a survey for over a decade of how effectively we were or were not drafting, and they rated our drafting to be third or fourth best in the National Football League over, say, the last dozen years. And that is measured by play time, by performance, by those types of metrics.
You got Giddings?
There was Giddings, and as you know, we also subscribed, as a lot of teams do, to Pro Football. So there's multiple sources, but this was more on the Pro Football Scouting, PFS. So that tells us that if we can have an effective offseason and free agency to build for now, and yet also look to the draft to continue to build that pipeline of future players, that has the chance to be a positive thing for our football season this year. Not in 2 years, not in 4 years, now.
Was that kind of, I mean, you guys, we saw the numbers, we didn't know that you spent over what you wanted to, or not wanted to, where you thought you might.
That's right.
Was that kind of drawn on by that feeling to show, whether it's the fans or just to show your team, that you guys are out there trying to be aggressive with that win now kind of message?
Paul, I would say it was less trying to send a message. You're always aware of the message, and you want your fans to hear that message, but it frankly was driven more by we had an opportunity to do some things that we thought would positively impact the football team. We didn't think that we were going to get as many opportunities to do that as we did. So when those opportunities arose, we wanted to be aggressive with them, and I think we were. I think when we met with you guys a month ago, you know, we outlined that the cap was 177.2. We went in, once you reserve for the draft, once you know you're going to get some injuries, all the things that we've talked about for years, and said, okay, we've got effectively $15 million of room, something like that, and I think we committed over $25 million in cap room. So we're going to have to figure out what that means from the back end, but we did it as much as anything to improve the football team right now. Yeah. And that was what drove the off-season thinking.
Is there any concern over season ticket holders? I don't know if you guys have been pleasantly surprised with retention or mm-hmm. if there's been a lot of fallout. Is there any concern over where that's at? Or
We think this season will be, from a fan standpoint, there will be a bit of a Missouri approach. It'll be a show me, and we understand that. So that will probably modify where we start. We hope to rebuild that quickly. But again, we know that the number one thing that fans are looking for is they want to see good on-field results. We gave them that for a long time. The last 2 years have not been as strong as we want. That's why, and because our belief that this is a very mature football team that can have high-end success, that's why everything we've done this offseason has been to focus on the now.
Yeah.
We certainly hope that we'll have a lot of fan enthusiasm as we go into the season.
Yeah.
I mean, we had great reaction, obviously, from our players that were up, and they're excited to be back, and hopefully that will carry over to the fans as we get them back here in a couple weeks.
Okay, so there's, you know, you hear Troy, and you know, he made his point. His point is they went, you know, $10 million over what they said. They said they wanted to do 15 and they ended up around 25. They took on the $11 million salary of Cordy Glenn and were aggressive in trying to re-sign Tyler Eifert and got Preston Brown. And I guess I'll just turn it over to you for a minute here. Do you find these comments real, laughable, somewhere in between? Where do you view it?
I think, can it be both? And here's what I mean by that. I believe it is real in their model. Now we've seen this before from them the last couple. I want to say, Paul, it was 2016, you know, coming off that year where, yes, two guys had left in the receiving core, but they did spend a little bit. You know, I mean, there were some extensions, and say what you want about Carlos Dansby and what he was that year, but there was some thought that they stretched, right? So I guess we've seen them kind of go over their self-proclaimed budget before. So I think for them, this is very real that they've spent money. I'm sure in their mind they feel they spent it better, you know, that a Chris Baker, that a Preston Brown, frankly, that a Bobby Hart. I know people, it's like $1 million. He may not make the team, but at least for now, I mean – he started all 16 games at right tackle for an NFL team, which is more than anyone else on this team can say. So, you know what I mean? So I think they – and then, of course, Cordy Glenn. So where I get the fan perspective and where I could maybe quibble – and I'll be honest, Paul, I don't really recall – I mean, like, would Nigel Bradham – have made the difference here? Like would an extra $32 million outlay for a linebacker been changed all this for fan perspective, you know?
Yeah.
That's really what we're talking about, right? Like the difference between 1 and 4 for Preston Brown and 4 and 32 for – so, you know, they've got – you know, people point to the $17 million in cap space they sit with which after rookie pool is actually 9. So I get it. You know, there were no sexy names again. So I'm on the fence, I guess. Like, you and I were in Indy, and we talked about the big splash free agent, and we said how kind of weak this class was. But I mentioned Preston Brown. So I'm not knocking the signing of Preston Brown because I thought they should have done it. But I guess it was just 1 year and four, Paul.
Yeah.
And we've seen this story before. So, if they don't think he's a $30 million linebacker or a $28 million linebacker, that's fine. But you only think he's a one-year – well, now he's in the category of Hawk, Dansby, Minter, right?
Yeah, I don't think that they viewed him that way. I think that they probably would have paid him more if he was a target above re-signing Tyler Eifert or doing the Glenn deal or whatever. But then when the market sort of came to them and he just wanted to play at home for a year and was willing to take essentially a pay cut to do it – and they found a deal in that. To me, I think it's this. I think the problem is until they go win, they're going to be a laughingstock because of what's happened the last few years, because of re-signing Marvin Lewis and how that was viewed. And so the reaction to anyone saying, oh, win now, to a team that is not going to do that by trying to get all the free agents and, you know, all that stuff. I mean, that's not how they operate. They're going to win now by the evolution of their last two drafts and the infusion of talent they're going to get from 11 picks this year. You know, I mean, that's, right. that's where they feel like they're gonna win, and that's gonna make the difference. But they did go get a few extra pieces. I mean, they did go over with to get Eifert and Preston Brown, and over what you know you would have maybe anticipated it when you throw in the Cordy Glenn. I mean, I think it, you're right. It's aggression for them. It is not by, you know, massive splash type of thing. But I also, how many teams that, quote, win in free agency win in the fall, right? Who was that? I mean, who were teams that weren't out there spending? New England, Pittsburgh.
Dallas. Oh, but Paul, Pittsburgh restructures all their deals, though, so they could sign
guys. No, they restructured their deals so they could get under the cap.
Cap, right. Yeah, but that's, you know, that's the other thing.
Yeah, because they didn't sign any. Who did they sign? They didn't sign anybody.
they offered their running back $14 million.
Yeah.
That's what they did.
Yeah.
I mean, no, you're right, Paul. And look, they are right in the middle of the pack. I just looked it up on NFLPA.com. And trust me, listeners, the Players Association tracks cap dollar spent to the penny. The Bengals are right in the middle. You know, if cap space left, they're 17th, 17th fewest, 16th most, whatever you want, however you want to view it, right in the middle. And what does that mean? Again, you know, they've got 11 picks currently. The way the model works, and it's required, they can't work around it. If you have 11 picks at where they are slotted to have to pay those guys. It's like right in between $8-9 million. So, you know, you kind of need to leave some room for that.
Yeah. And let's not dive in. People hate that shit. Let's not.
I'm just saying, I guess that's what I'm trying to say is like, it's aggressive for them. But you don't I guess that's the thing, Paul. If people are like, oh, let's just say Dominican Sue, for instance, he signed a 1-year $14 million deal in Los Angeles. So that's a $14 million 2018 salary.
Yes.
Right? So that means you would have traded Brown and Cordy Glenn for a defensive tackle. Right? So, I mean, that's just the thing. It's like sort of an unreasonable. That's why I think you're right. Like they're in this weird space of being aggressive for them. But, you know, they've won 13 games in 2 years. And we know the history. I think fans just don't quite believe it because they don't see the sexy
name. I mean, you know, the splash was Cordy Glenn and fixing the line. They've been solely focused on the line with the new offensive line coach, which firing – you know, letting Paul Alexander go after he'd been here for decades, having, you know, a new offensive coordinator, essentially, even though it's the same guy, they now have new personnel. I expect them to be very aggressive in the first 2 days towards the offensive line. I would not be shocked if two of their first four picks go are offensive linemen. You know, that would – honestly, that's probably likely. I think the thought is – with what Terrell Austin's going to do on defense and some of the pieces that they have there, you know, allowing Carl Lawson and William Jackson III to grow, and we'll get to that, and then fixing the offensive line should allow everything to come back into it. There's lots of ifs in that. I mean, Eifert's an if, Vontaze is an if, you know, a lot of these, John Ross is an if. A lot of these guys are giant question marks, and more than likely a couple of them aren't going to happen because that's how the odds play. But, you know, they feel like if they fix the offensive line, really that's really been the problem. And everybody knows that. I mean, we knew that last year we knew that in 16 when they let up 40 plus sacks, and we knew it was going to be bad last year when they let Whitworth and Kevin Zeitler go after giving up 41 plus sacks. So, but they feel like they're doing their best to fix it. I feel like this whole conversation just makes people mad, and it's really hard to.
But they said it though. Like they said the thing.
Yeah, it's their message.
Like, I will say. I mean, I've also heard from, and I know you have too, from fans who are feel refreshed by that. Like when Mike, like when we sat down with Mike in January and he was like, well, why do we need to say we have to win the Super Bowl? Like, isn't that implied? Like we run a football team and that's what we are here to do. And people got mad at that. Like I did hear people at least feel it was refreshing to hear Bengals ownership sort of lay that out and say, mm-hmm. we are doing this for now. We are not rebuilding. You know what I mean? So I will give them the credit for hearing at least that part of the fan base that like clamors for that. And at least not question why they want it, but they just like gave it to them. So I will acknowledge at least the fans who are happy that they said those things.
Yeah. You know, and it kind of basically admitting, I mean, what we all know. I mean, any of you guys that are listening and maybe some that are not listening anymore because they gave up their tickets, you know, they have taken hits in season tickets and they are going to have to, as he said, modify their starting point essentially on what the season ticket base is. It's going to be low. They're going to have to rebuild that. And there's really, because of where they're at with fans for the most part, there's honestly really is only one way, and they're right. It is winning. I mean, there's just no other way, because there's a disaffection there, to really get them back, get fans back, other than going out there and winning football games. And that's what it's going to come down to. And for that respect, their roster is better. You can't look at what this offseason has been, particularly in comparison to the last 2 years of hemorrhaging, and not say that, well, they've improved. You know, I mean, yeah. They've added, they haven't lost anybody of real note. I mean, if you're Adam Jones is probably the most notable name that they've lost. AJ McCarron, right. who's a non-factor if everything goes well. Right. You know, they really, Russell Bodine, who everybody wanted to see leave, right? Addition by subtraction, especially. And then they've added pieces, and they will more in the draft. So To me, at the very least, they should be better on paper just because of they have more pluses than minuses this offseason.
Yeah, no, I definitely I would agree with that. I mean, you look at what their potential 53-man roster looks like. I mean, we're not even including whatever draft picks or – I still think – we'll touch on this in a bit. I still think they're in play for a safety, Paul. You know, I mean, maybe that guy is there at 21,
man,
or 44 or whatever. But like, I don't know. I don't.
Trey Boston hanging out there is very enticing for me. He has 7 picks the last 2 years, and how many times am I going to continue to hear from this team about the need for playmaking safeties and right. more interceptions? You know, that guy made plays, and somehow he's still sitting out there when the market has reached rock, you know, towards the bottom here. I mean, if they could find a way to fit that in where, okay, because at this point, nobody's signing anything that much more over a vet minimum type deal. And that's where everybody's at right now. There aren't names out there. Right. It's something that I would consider making a play for. That's for sure. I mean, if you just on the fact that he's made plays alone and getting interceptions.
Yeah. Yeah, I swing the other way because I guess I look at – I mean, Trey Boston might be more of a true that's a funny thing, Paul. I mean, we'll get into this too with Marvin talking about Terrell Austin's defense. I mean, because there's still unknowns with that stuff. Like, what are they going to run? How are they going to run it? I'm in the other boat. I like Eric Reed just from the sense of what you can do with him.
Yeah.
And how versatile he can be. Torn biceps 2 years ago, but he's got 10 career picks. And frankly, I mean, he had 3 picks last year, and I look at a guy who was playing linebacker.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, like, I think if the goal is a safety who can catch, look, we just named 2 guys who have more interceptions last year alone or in their careers than like the entire secondary of the Bengals ever right now.
Yeah.
Like if you think about it, Drake, when was the last time? I mean, we know the 100-yard non-touchdown, whatever, but like, I mean, it's been a little while since Dre racked up interceptions. Yeah.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. I mean, you look at a team that was in the top three in pressures last year that almost always equates to interceptions, and they hardly had any. Sean Williams and George Iloco only having 1 apiece last year. And that's And their idea is to pressure, let Drake Kirkpatrick and William Jackson III and Darqueze Dennard cover, and then see what happens. And thinking that that will be a way to get picks. So let's, as this topic moves forward, let's do it as well. So I want to bring up this topic here, and that was one of the more interesting parts of the Breakfast with Marvin. I know our fans love hearing from Marvin Lewis, but this was honestly a good. He divulged more here into what is an important topic, and that is what will Terrell Austin's defense look like. We've heard so much about the offense, so much about the restructuring of the offensive line, and how they're going to get this thing fixed. It's sort of gone under the radar that this defense is going to. These are not tweaks, as it's kind of been called. I mean, it was not. He joked that his son, who's now the linebacker assistant, Marcus Lewis, is mad at him because he has to do all these drawings because everything is new. That's a quote. Everything is new. And so this is not a tweak. This is a new defense with a new idea of how things are going to work. So I want to bring in Marvin talking about what this will look like. That includes a couple of players who were breakout stars of last year being featured more prominently in William Jackson III and Carl Lawson. So we get into that and more. But this is more of Marvin Lewis speaking specifically about how the defense should look different in 2018.
Can he handle, I guess, is he in a situation now since he did so well as a rush end? I mean, he can handle more now playing linebacker? Or?
Well, again, I think in Terrell's vision, he sees the opportunity to utilize Carl more in the base defense than what we did with Paul.
Yeah.
And it goes back to where I was in Baltimore. And so those are the things we feel good about. So, and that involves, you know, the utilization of Carl's abilities a little bit more in base defense.
Kind of the tilt towards aggression, I guess, a little bit more is part of it.
Well, again, we want to dictate to them, not vice versa.
Yeah.
You know.
For Bullard, right?
Yeah.
Bullard. Just on that pickup of Paul about the defense, how different is that going to be? Is that pretty much going to be a continuation of Zimmer and Gunther?
Well,
Lewis, Zimmer, Gunther, and Vine.
We've got some corners that have a lot of talent and ability. We've got to do a better job of utilizing their abilities as well.
Yeah, it looked like you didn't play a lot of press man.
No, that's not true. But we can do more.
How do you look with more pressure?
Well, yeah, I think you have to be able to apply pressure, and we have guys who can do that. And then we have guys in the back end that ought to be able to cover and give us that opportunity.
Darqueze had a great year last year. How do you view him? Is he a slot corner, or could you view a situation where he was playing the two and moving in as the guy out there the whole time?
I had to explain to him how valuable that spot is.
Yeah.
You know, a guy like Rod Woodson played nickel, inside nickel corner almost throughout his whole career until he became a full-time safety, and then he still came up and did it. So, you know.
Leon too, right? Kind of Leon for us?
Well, yeah. I guess and maybe Darqueze saw in his mind as Leon was getting older, and then that was more his role, as opposed to, you know, that's an important position for you because it's somewhat it's a quarterback on your defense. And I think that was the thing most pleasing about Darqueze, is his knowledge of the game and his ability to communicate to William, to Dre, or whoever's outside of him, you know, is big. And Darqueze fought his butt off last year to stay out there and stay on the field on Wednesdays when sometimes he couldn't walk.
Yeah.
To get some work done on Thursday to be ready to go Friday and go out there and show he could play on Saturday morning to me. And, you know, and then suit up and play his tail off on Sunday, and then we go back and back him again and cotton and do it again.
Was that not that he didn't want to do that in the past, but was that a big step for him in his development just because he had so many of the Nixon injuries?
I think it was a big step. I think he proved to himself, you know, I wish everybody could go out there and feel great every Wednesday, but they don't. You know, we sat here and just had the conversation. We play in a very physical division, and it's difficult.
How did you feel like Dre played last year? You guys put your chip on him, and obviously you expect a lot.
I think Dre grew a great deal. I think if he, one area he needed to clean up is he had far too many loose hand penalties, and he's got to clean that up. But I think as a player and as a guy who's ascending into a leader responsibility and wants to, I feel good about that.
That's just technique stuff that's easy to clean up. Do you feel like that, or is that a thing that's...
Yeah, I think it's something, it's an attention to detail that you've got to be able to play, you know, winning corner in the NFL all the time. And he has the ability to do that. And, you know, that was part of, you know, the challenge for Durante as he comes in to coach those guys and be able to get them to understand the situation, field position, splits, all those things to be able to play the game at a very high level mentally as well.
What do you, is that what you're looking for from Durante, to maybe make these guys a little more aggressive?
No, not aggressive. You stay technique sound.
With the safety position, you guys obviously were interested in Kirk Coleman. Is that, what do you need more out of that position right now, do you feel like?
Well, you know, we got to get more playmaking.
Can those guys do that, do you feel like? Or is it need, do they need to be pushed? Or
I think they can do that as they become more comfortable. They always grow and become comfortable in what you're doing. That's part of it, you know, so that you have the ability to go make plays on the football.
Is that as simple as focusing more on tracking the ball for picks, or is it much more complicated than that?
It's always being in the right position,
yeah,
and being and then shooting your gun when the opportunities occur.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's Marvin Lewis, and you know, the one that has gotten the most reaction from people is talking about Carl Lawson and his changing role. And changing is really the wrong word for it. It's supplementing. It's adding. No one wants to change what Carl Lawson did last year. His performance as a nickel rush end was a game changer for this team and a game changer for what their future can look like. If he's that guy, if he is giving you that kind of production, I mean, you know, he had the second most pressures off the right side of the line in the NFL. Only Chandler Jones had more. He played 41% of snaps. You know, so if he can give you that kind of, you're not messing with that. And they're not messing with that. That's not, so I think that's kind of gotten muddled in this message. That's going to stay the same. The thought was, how can we get more of that? You know, and they're not totally comfortable with him as a first down run defensive end. So how could they do it more? Well, Marvin harkens back to his time with Peter Boulwer in Baltimore, where he also came in and was sort of this sort of attacking linebacker, like you would see in a 3-4 outside linebacker, right? Where you're on the edge. Are you dropping back? Are you putting your hand in the ground? Are you coming? You're just firing off and using him as sort of as a weapon that way. And occasionally covering. Now the concern is, can he do that? I don't know. And they'll find that out. But they want to give it a chance because it's a way they can feel like they can get him on the field more. And I think that's – I mean, trying to find ways to get Carl Lawson on the field more, I think should be welcome.
Yeah, I'm – put me in the camp of I need to – see this to believe right. It. I mean, I remember them trying to put Carl Lawson at linebacker last rookie camp and mini camp, and it was awful. He had no idea where to go, what to do. And this is a team that can't cover with their linebackers anyway. Yeah. Even their $35 million do-it-all guy can't seem to figure out how to do that anymore either. So I agree with you. Carl Lawson should play.
Yeah.
Now, how they do that, I don't really care. The easy way is to say, Michael Johnson, you play 30% less snaps. Now, whether they want to stand him up, whether they want to do some of the weird 3-4 looks where, or you know, what they call the Michael Johnson rover position, where they move him around, and that's fine too. But I really hesitate to say he should look like a linebacker or be in a position to have to do linebacker things.
Yeah.
I don't know. Now maybe that's just as simple as that, what I just said, the rover thing, where you would have Michael drop into a zone and kind of be around. But the funny thing is that Michael actually knew how to do that. So, and maybe that's easier to learn than covering a tight end or a running back, you know, because you're just kind of dropping into a space, right? So I guess we'll see. So put me in the camp of, I need to see that.
Right.
that's my one big hole with this team is what they do at linebacker. And I honestly don't think Carl Lawson playing there is an answer at all. But I do agree with you, though. It was interesting because when Terrell Austin was introduced, it was, we're going to do a lot of the same stuff because all the position coaches were the same. Like, you've built your front 11 and your back end to run a certain – to do a certain thing. So I do find it interesting that Terrell has Terrell and Marvin or whomever is like, okay, some of this is needs to be better. And in order – what they feel will be better is to be different. And I do compliment them at least on, like – acknowledging.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, Paul Gunther's system was one of let the other team make the mistakes. You just make sure your guys know what they're doing and they're in the right spots. And a phrase that we heard from Marvin a couple of times was, we need to be dictating to the offense what's going on, not the other way around. And Paul Gunther was sort of a, do whatever you want, we're going to be in the right spots and playing fast. And you'll make the mistakes. And whereas Terrell Austin's philosophy is more of a, let's force them into more mistakes. Let's be more aggressive in blitzing and getting after them and let our guys who can cover and make plays on the ball cover and make plays on the ball. Use more press man.
Right.
And that's why they draft these press man corners and use them in so much zone last year, or zone-like looks, that it wasn't really necessarily playing totally to their strength. William Jackson III is a ball-hawking press man corner.
Right.
And they should be taking advantage of that. There's no reason he can't be out there getting the number of picks that Marcus Peters did early in his career.
Right.
And LA hopes he still will. I mean, that's the type of guy he is. And that comes from pressure coming and guys throwing to their best receiver in one-on-one. Well, if you're doing that, then you're throwing at William Jackson. And he's ready to go make plays. Or you're throwing – if you go to the other side, you're throwing at Dre – I think Dre is much better off in a Dre cover that guy than when you get into the other stuff. And obviously they need to, as Marvin said, they need to work with his pass interfering.
Right.
But that's but to me, that's fixable. And I think if you take that stuff away, Dre has his moments. And Lord knows that they go viral, it seems. But you know, I think you're okay with him as a number two corner, and it's particularly when you have Darquez Dennard as your number three, or not number three, as the nickel corner. I like that threesome out there. You know what I'm saying? So I'm just saying, I think that philosophy of featuring those guys more and trying to be more aggressive in blitzing plays that, and that's Carl. That's where Carl Lawson, I think, plays in is. You can have him as an extra blitzing type of linebacker, where most of the time he's not dropping into coverage; he's just bringing it you know, Paul Gunther last year experimented a lot with five linemen, these five linemen pass rush. I think you're looking stuff. There's ways to be creative with it, where you're not putting Carl Austin in places where he's going to get exposed, right? And I think I would like to think that that's what they're talking about. We shall see. We shall see how that turns out. That's kind of where the defense is at. You know, the safety thing, we sort of touched on that. I would continue to keep your eyes there. You know, if they're wide open now at 21, and I would say even at 40, look, they take a safety, and you hear them talk about the fact that a cut's going to have to come from somewhere. That's right. Something they're going to have to figure out on the back end. Well, that could be it. I mean, that, because it clearly there's some issues there. You never know. That could be where it's at. If, you know, who they take in the draft this year more than ever, because they're saying it out loud, is going to affect some people that are currently kind of maybe probably starting on this team. As far as they won't be on this team. Whether it's LaFell, whether it's Michael Johnson, whether it's George Iloka, whether it's – who you name the name. I mean, if a first-round pick lands in your spot, I'd be real nervous if I was a Bengals player, especially if I had a big contract.
Yeah, that'll be an interesting you know, the Monday after the draft is always interesting. Because, you know, everyone runs to the locker, you know, of the guy in 15, you know, in 15, it was Andrew Whitworth.
16, it was Dre, and it was Adam Jones.
Right. So, it'll be interesting, you know. I would say, put it this way, Paul, if it's Sean Williams or George Iloka, that would be so out of the box for this organization, at least in the last handful of years, you know, or even Ryan Hewitt, you know, a guy who signed a modest extension and then just hasn't, I mean, no fault of his own, but just, you know, totally been marginalized and has been, I'd like the guy, but he's been 100% irrelevant for 3 years. Or 2 years, you know. So, like, that would be so out of the box for them, because when the few times that they release a veteran before the end of his deal, it's Ray Maluga. Was it Robert Gathers?
Yeah.
Right? Is that the name? So, I mean, what are we talking about here? We're talking about, like, dudes.
But they feel like they're already out of the box. It doesn't matter how we view it. I mean, they feel out of the box right now. Because you know what also is out of the box? Them talking about how someone's going to have to get cut, basically. We don't hear that from them. They don't say that. I mean, but they're admitting it. Like, that outlay that they did is going to have to come out of somewhere. Now
– which is interesting to me, because there's clearly – and we wrote about this before free agency with potential cap cuts. And Adam Jones didn't count. In the truest sense, because it was an option. But, I mean, you know, Brandon LaFell, Michael Johnson made the most sense when you looked at, like, age, dead performance money on the field, dead money. I mean, you know, Sean Williams and George Iloka are in the same boat. Like, they don't really carry the dead money either. But where to me, Paul, where that's out of the box is those are guys who are in the middle of second contracts. Like, they're not 33 and, like, we'll keep you because, like, it's a contract's a two-way street thing. You know what I mean? Like, that's why that would be really out of the box, would be if this is truly not just saber-rattling and it's truly not just a ploy or button-pushing or whatever you want to call it, if it's an actual real thing, like, safety drafted at 21 and then we get a press release on, you know, April, like, the before that Monday locker room, oh, we release George Iloka.
Well, or sign Trey Boston or Eric Reed and draft a safety, and then it would make – you know what I mean?
Right.
Where they are sort of swapping out. Right. An interesting thought. But here's the – and this is going to transition us to the next topic of Vontaze Burfict, and that is what I'm about to play you from Duke Tobin, which is their model of roster construction from – Duke's standpoint and from Troy and Katie's standpoint, family, is let's get as many good players onto this roster as we can and hand it to Marvin. And so that's why you would be surprised, because there's no reason to let George – you could need George Iloka and Sean Williams. If you drafted a guy and he's turns out he's not quite ready, or he's not doing what you thought he would do when he got there, he gets hurt.
Right.
You need those. It's stacking talent. And to have those guys on the deals that they do, you'd be surprised to see moves happen. But let me bring in Duke sort of talking about this. This is on Vontaze Burfict. I asked everybody I talked to this week about Fontez Perfect, trying to get a feel for how they view this whole situation, what the reality is with him, what the feeling is towards him and his latest four-game suspension. The one that I thought was best was Duke Tobin. I should say, when I asked Marvin about it, I asked if there was ever any point that he's felt close to being ready to feel like Vontaze Burfict is too unreliable. And it was, he just turned a flat no at me immediately. I mean, just basically an absolutely not. And yeah. So, and point, all only thing would admit was I pointed out, well, how can you put a calm a leader? How can you put him out there as a leader? He says, I don't put him out there as a leader. Well, okay. You paid him $38 million dollars and he's the leader of your defense. Like, how can he be a leader then? And he said, well, he's got to win guys' trust. I don't know. Okay. That's my whole point. No one can trust what they've got from Vontaze Burfict. Right? Anyway,
right.
Here was my conversation with Duke Tobin about Vontaze Burfict.
The Tez thing pops up. At what point has there ever been a point you've gotten to with him? I mean, this will be a third straight year you miss him at the beginning of the season where you've thought about, do we need to just not cut your losses, but just figure out something different and find something more reliable? Or is the other side of it just so strong with the way he can be that you're willing to deal with stuff?
Well, it's a hard question. It's not ideal. The situation he's put us in is not ideal.
Yeah.
We are a player oriented business, and players that can make a difference are important. And we recognize that. But obviously, you know, the more he's not available to us, the more it hurts. We have conversations on that a lot? Sure, we have conversations on that a lot. But at the end of the day, we're a player-oriented business. And the players are the ones that win or lose for us. And we try to collect as many players that can help us win. That's our job. That's what we do. That's our responsibility as an organization, to try to put the best football team on the field that we possibly can. It's not ideal when a guy's not available to us, and we recognize that. But again, our overriding thought is, how do we field the best football team we can possibly field?
Yeah.
And that's what normally drives all of our decisions.
Yeah.
And we're not in a position, from a cap standpoint. Katie's done such a marvelous job of keeping us in a position to where we don't have to make moves based on bad deals that we've done in the past.
Yeah.
You know, many of our players, you know, achieve their entire deal. That's a positive for us. That's a selling point for us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that we stay with our guys. We allow them to earn the deals and so forth. And, you know, it doesn't happen all the time, but it is a positive for us. Is it disappointing? Yeah. Does it hurt the football team early in the year? Yeah. But we feel like he can help us win as well. And that's an overriding thought for us.
Yeah. I just didn't know if it gets to a point where you say, you know, it's the unreliability actually doesn't make us a better football, because you build the team around a guy that good, knowing he's going to be out there. So, but if you take that away and you know he's taking himself away, a lot it crumbles the core of your team a little bit. Where maybe you'd be better off just trying to build it a different way rather than putting it around somebody who keeps putting yourself in these spots. I get what you're saying, but yeah. I don't know.
Those are all valid points.
You can write those too if you want.
Yeah. I think I have.
But again, what overrides what we do
is
who can affect games in a positive way for us to win. That's really all we think about. That's all the ownership of our club
worries about how do we put the best football team on. And you put the best football team on the field by putting the best players on your team.
Yep.
Guys that can affect games. And so that is the overriding thing when we talk about our players. Is can he positively affect the outcome of the football games?
So that's it from Duke. It's the bottom line from his angle. You know, there are valid points to be made about just reconstructing who you rely on with this defense, obviously. But his job is to give the most talent that you can. And because of the way they structured Vontaze's contract, he only hurts himself. They save money anytime he doesn't play. And so, when, you know, he'll come back and he'll play 12 games, and they hope he'll be that guy and help them win a lot of tilts this year. But it's just a matter of getting as much talent onto that defense as they can.
Yeah.
And so for that fact, you know, it makes sense to keep Vontaze Burfict.
Yeah. And that's the thing, Paul, because if the standard set in January was to win a Super Bowl in 2018, I cannot, in good football consciousness or be an objective reporter or writer on this team and tell you this team has a better chance to win the Super Bowl without 55. Like, if you just take him off the roster and you go with what they've got, that's not good. So, and you're right. All of those things are correct in what you said, as Duke Tobin. I mean, he's already gone for four games. He doesn't play full seasons. He gets injured. He gets suspended. And yet, at the end of the day, as this team is currently constructed, he is their best linebacker. He is the only guy on a team. I mean, Dre's got 10 career picks. Outside of Dre, is the only guy, right, that like knows what it's like to create a turnover, right? It's just so, you know, that's why the trade stuff was stupid and a non-thing and inaccurate, as we said many times. It's why the releasing him was a non-thing and because it's just he's frankly their best linebacker and one of their best players when he's in shape and around.
Yeah.
So I just –
Yeah, let me bring in when I asked Troy about Vontaze real quick, because he sort of addressed – I dropped a for the record on him. Can we just get this on the record about this Vontaze Burfict trade stuff? And also we talked to him about, you know, respecting the locker room and things like that. I thought it was good. So let me – here was Troy when we were talking to him about Vontaze Burfict.
The news came out about Vontaze – but you guys have known about it for a while, but
right.
How much concern is there organizationally about relying, because he's such a key part and everybody knows how high a level he can play at, relying on a guy who's been, by availability, unreliable in recent years? Is there concern over that?
I think the driving thought with Vontaze, and our fans reflect this as well as anybody, is that he has been and can continue to be a special player for us. Do we wish we had a guarantee that he would be on the field 100% of the time? Yeah, we wish that about a lot of guys. But I think the overarching thought is that for us to achieve the things that we want to achieve as a football team, you need as many good players as possible. And the cumulative effect of having a lot of quality players at a lot of different positions is how you get to be a really good team. We're not ignorant of the fact that Vontaze has missed time due to both injury and suspension. We've been aware of the potential for a suspension for some time. Was that part of why we drafted Nick Vigil and think he's developing into a good player? No, you just keep adding good players. Was it part of why we did what we did with Jordan Evans last year? No, you just keep adding good players. I think we hit on two good young linebackers there. It did help motivate us a little bit when we had the opportunity with Preston Brown to add more quality depth to that position. But we think on defense and at linebacker that we've got good players. It should be able to perform at a high level, and hopefully we'll have Vontaze on the field as much as possible this year.
Do you worry about a
locker room impact that the guys.
Vontaze is well liked and well respected in the locker room. And the players know that A, he's a special player, and B, he's a really smart football player. He helps them. He helps them play better. So I don't think that there's a negative that way. The negative is going to be what Paul said, lost time. When you're not there, you're not helping the team win.
Just for the record, I guess, have you guys been approached about a trade? People interested in him?
The whole trade discussion, Paul, we don't get into unless there's something to actually report. And I think, unfortunately, some people in some different parts of the league put some stories out, and we're just not going to get into that. Our focus is on having the best team in 2018 that we can, and we feel that Vontaze helps us do that.
One thing about that comment is, you know, I do think players like Vontaze, and I do think they feel like he's a good teammate. I think they wish that a lot of the things that he did that took him out of games didn't happen, but they also do gain a confidence when he's out there. We've seen that over the years.
Yeah.
I mean, they feel he brings them something special when he is doing his thing. The problem is that it doesn't happen enough.
Right.
But, you know, so I thought that was the point. And then obviously his – I don't know who said what, where, about the potential of a trade happening, but I did find that an interesting reaction. Or I guess we're to be believed that somebody said something somewhere as trying to leak something to me. I don't know why.
Right.
But
yeah,
just I thought interesting comments.
Yeah, it's no, you know, this team paid him a year before they had to, and I mean, if they're being realistic, they should look in the mirror and really regret that. But but they did pay him, and that's how they feel about him. So it's like Adam Jones a year ago this time, Paul. You know what I mean? Like it's just they don't. I think these are the costs of doing business in the NFL for them. And it's just not a, I think Adam Jones finally in 2018, the talent, or the loss of a step or whatever you want to call it, a lack of talent now, I guess, I don't know, made him expendable, you know, whereas Vontaze Burfict, let's be real. Like, and let's also be real. He'll finally look like he's in shape in week 7. So, you know, for the back half of the year, he might look like an $11 million a year linebacker.
Yeah, and so, we've seen that show before.
Right. So, you know.
And they're probably willing to pay him that for 7 good games, especially if those come at the end of the season.
Right.
So, but we'll see. I mean, we'll, you know, we've seen, again, we've also have seen this before. So, we know how that ends. Let's dive into a few Twitter questions that we have because everyone obviously will have questions. So let's talk about – let's see. This one from Rich P. On a scale of 1 to 10 with consideration of the effect of cap space, how important are new deals for Atkins and Dunlap? Much love, Rich P. Always asking questions. Good follower. So the Geno thing was one of the big takeaways of the conversation with Troy and Katie. They made very clear their desire to get an extension done with Geno Atkins. I think there's a thought and a right one if he can have 3 more great seasons that Geno Atkins could be their next Hall of Famer. And they understand that this yesterday was his 30th birthday.
Yeah.
And that's not normally a good thing to be paying players, but you can structure it as we know they like to do with no dead money or team options on the back end where if things do fall apart and he loses everything in 3 years, they can get out of that deal if they need to. So, I mean, you'd be paying a guy for his age 30, 31, and 32 season. That's not as crazy as you start getting into 33 and 34. I mean, I think you would probably feel comfortable that he's got 2 more basically prime seasons in him. After that, I think Father Time would suggest you're taking a risk.
Yeah, and I think, Paul, you wrote a great piece a while ago on this. I mean, you know, John Randall was a Pro Bowler, had 11 sacks when he was 34
mm-hmm.
in Seattle. You know, he had 7 sacks at a 35-year, which is a good year for a 35-year-old.
Defensive right? interior I mean, tackle, yeah.
Right. So we're talking about, and like, what are we literally talking about? Like a Geno Comp, a guy, if you think he's a Hall of Famer, they usually last a little longer. Obviously, that's what they're hedging on. And also, Paul, you know, he doesn't play very much.
He plays the last few years, he's been playing about in the 70% range.
Yeah. So that might have even dipped even below that this past year. So he's kind of a specialty guy anyway. Like he's now granted, look, he's getting double team, triple team. He is getting contacted on every single play. So I'm not minimizing what he has to deal with on a snap to snap basis. However, he is not, you know, your every down guy anymore. So and hasn't been. So I could see too where the Bengals feel, okay, in this 2-year window, maybe 3 years, here's a guy who's playing 60% of the snaps in an effort to get to the quarterback. You're right, Paul. I think that to them that makes sense. And he's a guy that, like a Michael Johnson, like a Leon Hall, like I'll name the list, you know, they're okay paying $9 million to that last year.
Yeah.
Or that last two, where it's kind of like, okay, he's playing 50% of the snaps and it's just, you know, getting hope something comes out of it. You know, we're talking about Geno the leader as opposed to Geno the all pro.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I also think that they've shown that they don't have a willingness to play guys when they feel like the end is upon them. You know, right. Whether you're talking about Willie Anderson or Andrew Whitworth, yeah. Where they are very cognizant of age. But they like are. We said, I mean, they're in win now and win in the very near future, 18 and 19. And that will mean keeping Geno Atkins happy because, like we said, I think he's got definitely you could probably count on 2 prime years. If he has 2 years, and this is a conversation for another day, but if he has 2 years that look like 15 or 12, I think you make a legitimate Hall of Fame case. Yeah. I mean, I really do. And that means something to this team, which has one damn Hall of Famer.
Right.
And you know, argument, we can get into the Kenny Anderson, Kenny Riley, Willie Anderson, all that stuff. We've done that before. We did it 2 years ago, was it now? When we did the Bengals Ring of Honor thing. But, I mean, I just feel like that means something. Now, this is a really long-winded answer for Rich Pete. Carlos Dunlap. You get the feeling that possibly they look at Jordan Willis and Carl Lawson and say, maybe that's a guy that we don't necessarily have to pay into his 30s.
Right.
And maybe that is something that we consider now. And maybe that's part of moving forward. Because, you know, if it's a matter of trying to figure out where the future lies monetarily and future extensions that are going to be had, whether it's William Jackson III, whether it is Carl Lawson or Jordan Willis, or, you know, you start getting into those guys. If that's what you're talking about, maybe you do get one more season out of Carlos and see if you can hang with his market value when he hits free agency next year.
Yeah, because that's the thing, Paul, is 30-year-old – I mean, pass rushers are and they're a rare commodity, so he might end up getting paid and have a bigger market than most. But look, Carlos fits to me in the Vontaze Burfict situation a year ago. Like sometimes it's okay to let a guy play out that year. I mean, Carlos Dunlap's best year, Paul, was 2015, right? The only year that he's ever had double-digit sacks. Not coincidentally, that was also a year that if he hit certain markers, he got contract escalators for 17, 18. What? I mean, I'm just saying. I'm not saying what I'm saying.
Guys are motivated by money. It's okay.
It's okay.
Guys are motivated by money. You should use that to your advantage. That's a good thing.
So I
use it. The same way with Ted. I agree with you, Jim. Yeah. I'm with you on this.
So, yeah, you know, Geno, like I said, they've done a good job. Geno's a generational talent and a guy that, you know, I wish he would talk to us about how good he is. But put it this way. I love Carlos and talking to Carlos. He's a stand-up dude. He's always in that locker room, win, lose, good, bad, whatever. But, you know, if Geno gets the extension, Paul, I mean, we get Geno on.
Podium Geno.
So, like,
uncomfortable,
I mean,
podium, like, look, Geno. Who wants it?
Who wants it? I do. I do. I want it so badly. As we say, Paul, yeah. I root for me, and Geno Atkins making $100 million.
Yes, podium Geno. That's what I want. That's
podium Geno.
We all want it. We all want it. That's rich people. Let's do one more Twitter question, so just so we can get to a couple here. It's in the same area from Stephen Lilly, another guy, always asking questions, great Twitter follower. If the Bengals draft Daron Payne or another defensive tackle early, who gets cut? Not Atkins or Baker. Would it be Billings? Would it be Glasgow? That seems nuts. I will say this. What were we talking about earlier? It's not going to necessarily be a direct correlation. First round draft pick means a dude's getting cut at that position. It's not necessarily going to go that way. It's going to be a pick at some positions that do have vulnerabilities. Could be. I mean, I would say defensive end. When you start, if it was somebody who would step into a Michael Johnson role, we mentioned safety earlier, or some of the scenarios there. Don't think of it as a direct defensive tackle means somebody on the back end falls off the cliff, like that quarter game that you play at like festivals and stuff, you know, where you put the quarter in the one spot and the bulldozer pushes it and the quarters fall off the front. That's not how I would look at it necessarily. I think they will look at the breadth of what positions they ended up addressing in the draft the most and they feel the most comfortable with in providing insurance for the current starters and then figure out who's expendable. That could be a Brandon LaFell situation. If they end up a nice receiver falls into their lap in the third round and then, you know, you throw that in the mix with Josh Malone and John Ross, now you feel like you got insurance in your third round receiver and you're paying Brandon LaFell $4 million for what? We've already talked about that in the past. That's a situation. Or the same thing with the Michael Johnson thing. I think that's more the way that you look at it. Or linebacker. Well, I mean, not that they would get rid of Vinny Ray, but I mean, if you're looking at spots for money, if they just did a major addressing at linebacker,
right?
You know, you could see moves happen there potentially because they like what they got out of Nick Vigil and Jordan Evans, and they've got Perfect, and they've got Preston Brown now. Yeah, there's areas. I just think it will be a big picture. Not number 21 means that dude's cut.
Yeah, no, it's you're right about that. Especially if they decide to draft a guy at 21 who's injured and can't play. So let's not rule out bangling themselves in that regard again. But I guess if you're going to look at D-tackle, though, I mean, they do love Josh Tupou for some reason. He's on the 53, man. he had his DUI issue in the offseason. Undrafted free agent, the guy with private squad eligibility. So if you are, you know, looking for a high pick DT, you know, there you go. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, I think high pick DT is definitely in play. I mean,
I'm just saying, like, if you want to look for a one-to-one on a line, like that's the guy. Like, that's the guy. Like, the guy who's the rookie, undrafted rookie who hasn't played and has PS eligibility. But you're right, though, Paul. Like, it is a bigger – I think they're looking at improving the 53, 1-53, and then 1-46. And I think that's – you're right. That's where the big picture comes in.
If this draft looks like 2012 when they took Mosa Nu in the third and Marvin Jones in the fifth, right. Brandon LaFell is expendable. You know, I mean, it's, but they, you never know how that's going to go. They don't go into it anticipating doubling up at certain positions, but every year they do because they're surprised at where value falls for them with certain guys. It was like when they took Andrew Billings, they didn't expect Andrew Billings to be there or that to be a position that they would be going after right there, but they did because it was great value. If that happens, then there's a ripple effect at other positions. That's what I would look for. Probably more in the middle rounds than the first round necessarily, although that could be part of the equation. From Fulton at Fultonator, why only 1 year deal for Prester Brown? We know that's quote what they do, but he's young, tackle leader, durable. Can they commit to 2 or 3 years? I think they like the prove it deal with Brown. I Preston Brown was available at 1 year for a reason. He's not a do everything. He may have played every down in Buffalo, but I don't think that's not the ideal situation for him. Ideally, I think he's more of a first, second down linebacker. And I don't think you want him out there in the nickel all the time. I think Buffalo sort of was forced to play him out there all the time. I think they'd like to see what he looks like with Tarrell Austin's scheme. Yeah. And they got him at a good deal. It's 1 year, it's four, and then we'll see how you fit with the Bengals and move forward after that. You know, I like those 1 year prove it deals. I think it incentivizes the team, incentivizes the player. And Preston Brown didn't like where his market fell, and the Bengals took advantage of that with one that works for both sides like this. So, I'm okay with it. Why commit to if you don't have to? Because Preston Brown, it's not like they're signing a game changer as far as, you know, a Pro Bowl type guy. He's a plug and play starter guy. But if you don't need to do extra years with a guy who you don't know how he's going to fit in your system, then don't.
Yeah,
do
no,
it.
And. Preston wanted a 1 year deal at this point. I mean, he had option. Yeah, he had an option. To sign a couple year deals in Buffalo and elsewhere that he just didn't like. So that was a two way street. You know, a year ago, the Bengals offered Kevin Minter multiple years, and he said no. He bet on himself, and you know he got hurt. And didn't play very much, and obviously he's still a free agent. So you're right, Paul. It can go both ways. I think. Put it this way, I like what they've done at linebacker the last 2 years. Minter and Brown are young veterans who have a track record. They're not Dansby and Hawk, right? Obviously, Minter didn't work out. Obviously, they feel Preston Brown will to be seen. I think that's just their biggest issue is that position. It blows my mind.
Yeah.
But why one year? I think it was mutually agreed upon that 1 year is best for both parties. And I do think, as you said, Paul, earlier, there is room for either a late season extension like a Clark Harris or a guy who would do an extension before he actually reached free agency in 2019.
Yeah. All right, we've covered it today, boy. We've run the gamut. This is like a state of the franchise pod today. We got everything in there. So all right, well, we've got to get to our power rankings, of course. You know, I stayed at the Spring Hill Suite to get my Marriott points in, and it had like the middling mediocre hotel breakfast buffet. You know, the standard breakfast buffet that you find at all of these high-end hotels. And it got me to thinking. And there was a lot of talk during the coach's breakfast about breakfast buffets, fruits, where you go with these when you're going through the line. I thought power ranking the best breakfast buffet foods, which brings into account taste, reliability, consistency of when you're actually getting them at the buffet, not made to order, I thought would be a good power ranking. Are you game?
Yeah.
I'm all right. Let's go with your top two. Start with number two. What is your number two on the breakfast buffet line?
This will not be a popular choice, but it's because of how first of all, I was going to do cereal, Paul, but I thought that was weak.
It is weak.
It's probably fits the best in terms of consistency, and you know what it is when you're getting it because it's cereal. I won't do that. I'll stay away from.
You're about to go yogurt on me, aren't you?
Well, close. I'm gonna go. Because I'm gonna go actual breakfast. So like the yogurt is sealed, and you know what I mean. Yeah. It's like the cereal, like it's prepackaged. So I'm gonna go with the oatmeal as number two.
Oatmeal.
Yeah, because to me, that's kind of it's not like cereal and yogurt, but it's close. Like it's always the same, and you always and see me, Paul. I am not a plain oatmeal guy. I like to put all the stuff in it, and usually, like the almond shavings are good, the cranberries are good, or the dried, if you're into like adding the brown sugar, like it's not cereal and oatmeal, but like it comes out that morning. It is what it is. And they're really not messing that up. So that's number two to me.
Yeah.
Number one, take a step further, is the waffle.
The waffle.
Yeah. You pour the stuff into the waffle maker. Cause again, you can't mess up the batter. And then that machine does it for you. Like, there's no gray area there.
Here's the problem I have with the waffle. This is why it's not on my list. Is you run into the same thing. Is people using the waffle maker. The chance that, you know, it takes so long, right? And people don't know how to use it right. And so you're sitting there and you're waiting. You get frustrated because you were waiting. Or there's always – it's everyone, I think, is a little uncomfortable with that machine. You know, it causes this kind of some disgustingness that can happen on the actual waffle maker. I just feel like it causes more problems in that setting than anything else.
It could be a what makes you mad situation of like the self checkout at the grocery store. Like if you don't know how to use it by now, like just stay away.
Yeah.
But I will say though the ability to know what I'm getting and not be sick afterwards trumps maybe having to wait in line for someone who doesn't know what they're doing.
All right, I like that. Neither of those two are on my top list, or they're not on my bottom. They're very middling for me for the reasons I mentioned. Number two for me is the bacon. Now. Bacon is bacon, so like it's tasty, it's delicious. It would seem to be a surefire number one, but for me, it's number two because bacon on the buffet is so inconsistent. It's maddening, and because bacon shouldn't be that hard, but it's hard to get A, pieces the way you like them, and B, get any of them all to be the same inside of the buffet. Right. However. The payoff when you get a good piece of bacon is still untouched.
The payoff?
It's still untouched across the whole buffet. I mean, that still can make your day. The inconsistency gets to me, but it's still bacon. So that's my number. That's why it's number two. For me, number one is the potatoes. And let me explain why. They're not the best. You know, it's not like the potato, but they're the same. Like, and they taste just fine, and you can go to them, and you they'll usually have some mix of some sort of seasoning on them that's okay. They usually don't get over-seasoned, and they're almost always the same and consistent, and everybody loves a potato. So that's where I go, potatoes one, bacon two on my top two. Any issue with that?
Well, I mean, I can see why you picked bacon, but that – see, to me, though, like the inconsistency and the odds of getting the bottom of the pan floppy one.
Oh, yeah.
That's where my issue goes. See, I went with more consistent Potatoes is weak, man.
Yeah, but you're eating oatmeal. Like, you talk about weak. You're over here eating oatmeal.
You're picking sides. Like, those aren't actual, like, what you eat for breakfast.
That's part of the meal. Like, they're on the buffet. We're ranking the portions of the buffet.
Yeah.
How does that not count? Look, I'm getting eggs. I'm getting bacon. I'm getting potatoes. I'm doing all those things. I'm ranking which ones I like the most.
Put it this way. The odds, and we've done this. we have actually lived this situation where I have gone waffle and a yogurt and maybe that might be it. And I have a good breakfast, and you went eggs and bacon and been like,
Look, I'm just a high risk guy. I'm all about the high risk reward situation. I'm willing to deal with it. But I'll take. All right, so let's go bottom two. Let's go bottom two. What do you got?
Well, number two is I will go eggs, because eggs you can get a good one. I rarely go eggs, because it's just it's most of the time it's bad. It's wet. It's like flat.
Yeah.
It's I don't know what it is. And I really don't like breakfast buffet eggs. So that shows you how bad my number one is, and that's the fruit.
Yeah.
Look, occasionally now you're at the owners' meetings, so that actually and the one time I went, the fruit selection actually was really good, because you've got, you know, like billions of dollars worth of people sitting in that room.
So you get the good fruit.
So you get the good fruit. And so occasionally it's good. But generally speaking, Paul, generally the rooms we stay in, bringing Bengals coverage to you, it's that weird like melon and purple grape combination that's just bad.
It's truly bad.
You don't want that. Yeah, you don't want that.
I have number two. I have bagel because they always – you always have the toaster, and usually it's the toaster oven, the grid, you know, the rotational grid. And the line of people milling about waiting, I lose my mind. Like, if there's any kind of crowd – at all at the buffet, and they're all like stand, or you have to stand, you'd like stand back and try to avoid the people that are coming through, but they want to get in front of you and put their stuff in or whatever. I just choose it's best to just avoid that entire situation. It drives me bonkers. So that's why I have bagel in there. And the bagels are like, it's been, how long has this been sitting out? Is this from yesterday? I don't feel comfortable when you're talking about bread that I don't know where it's been and it's just been out. All of the bagel situation I don't like. And then number one, I was more specific than you. I went honeydew. Like, I'm saying, yes, the fruit is bad, but particularly that one right there. That is the worst of all of them. Cantaloupe up in the same general direction. But yeah, I'm with the fruit, and it sits in the pile in like the wetness, and it gets like gooey anyway. And there's the slide. In fruit that's been sitting out, you don't want that.
Right.
You're right. There's no doubt that pile of fruit, no one's happy if they've got a plate and the only thing on it is that fruit.
Yeah.
You're having a bad morning.
Right.
A truly bad morning. All right, good rankings. Good rankings. Of course, as always, send us your thoughts on top two, bottom two, power ranking of breakfast buffet items. Why are you mad? Tell them why you're mad.
It's spring. I don't like it.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. For a real easy reason. Now everyone knows I love golf, and I usually that means, you know, you can go outside and hit balls, but I don't like spring because it's the emergence of the orange cones, Paul. Like I don't, it makes me so angry that like you can literally take the same route, you know, 9 hours later and all of a sudden a whole highway's closed, ramps are closed. And then now you're stuck with that now till, you know, 5 years from left. Yeah. Like it's just, I'm so mad at that. Like it's just, I wish I could have just skipped right to June. That's how angry I am about it. I can't even bring myself to speak clearly. It's just,
you don't like spring?
No, I don't like spring for that reason.
My God.
It's wet and cold and crappy.
It's not wet and cold and crappy. All the time it's nice. It's the first time it's been nice in a while. Wet, cold, you finally crappy. Able to like break out your short sleeve shirts again. Baseball's getting going. Like, what is wrong with you?
No. And construction cones. All that crap.
There's always construction.
No, it's bad. It's when it starts.
I will say this. To connect with that, why I'm happy was I just got to enjoy 3 days of not having to avoid a pothole. And like, it was just so refreshing to drive and not constantly feel like I'm on some sort of obstacle course to avoid giant canyons in the road that will just break your car in half. I mean, I'm always staggered by what happens to roads in places like where we live.
That's why that happens? Because spring, weather changes, pavement cracks.
Stop. But there's so many other good things about spring. You're just focusing too much on the negative. I liked it when you had turned over a new leaf and you were like going to be a happy guy this year. Whatever happened to that?
He died.
He's dead.
Screw that guy.
Screw that guy. Screw spring. Screw it all.
Yeah.
Okay. Just checking. Glad we established that. All right. Well, appreciate everybody for listening. We'll be back next week. We're officially into the draft podcast series. So we'll start 100% where we'll be all draft talk all the time between now and the draft at the end of April. So we'll be bringing in some special guests that are connected to draft coverage, and we'll get into every aspect of what the Bengals are going to do at the end of the month. So keep an eye out for that. And I can tell you, I can drop a hint in here. Another live BBP is in our near future, and I think this one is going to be even better than the last one. We'll be out at 50 West. More details to come, but just keep that in mind. You guys are really going to like this. I'm really excited about, I think, what we're going to be pulling off at 50 West with our next live BBP surrounding the drafts. So keep an eye out on that. And of course, as always, thanks 50 West. Our sponsor, if you've not been down there, Jim hates spring, but they don't hate spring down there. They've got volleyball leagues, running groups, you name it, they've got it. The Canoe Library, all that stuff is going. And, of course, they have all their beers on tap in the production works over across the street. Get delicious food. They've got it all. Love 50 West. And we will be down there again soon. And drinking with you, consuming a few pops, and talking Bengals. So keep an eye out for that. Anything you'd like to add, Jim, before we go bye-bye?
No, I'm good. I'm ready. I'm ready for that live BBP. And, you know, let's get this draft over with. You know me, Paul. I like when this stuff – I'm like Marvin in that regard. I want this stuff to be done with, and let's talk real football when there's 90 guys.
Yeah.
But it's a good run-up, though. We're going to have good stuff.
So keep an eye out for that. Thanks to everybody who stuck around for our extended State of the Franchise BBP here. We went super long today, but there was a lot to get to. So anyway, thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll talk to you next week.